Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Professor David Meltzer. David is here to help me understand a new paper in Nature magazine. Professor Meltzer is at the Department of Anthropology at SMU in Dallas, Texas. He is also an archaeologist, and so he's guiding me through a story that is fresh, very fresh. The title of the piece in Nature magazine, the premier magazine in Europe, matching Science magazine here for peer-reviewed articles, is Peopling of the Americas as Inferred from Ancient Genomics. Genomics is the breakthrough here. This is frontline thinking about the people of North America who were here when the Europeans arrived, 14th, 15th century, maybe before with the Vikings, and what genomics tells us about the scattering of people across the North and South America and Central America from the last glacial maximum until about 2,000 years ago in the Mesoamerica. That huge range. And, Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Congratulations. You and your colleague Eske Willerslev published this piece, so we need to do some definitions. First, if I understand correctly in the explication, heretofore, what we had for evidence of people's origins, their lineage, was mitochondrial DNA, uniparental, through the mother. But genomics now provides us much more articulation about the mixing and the cross breeding and what you'd have to say is the accident of human history. This revelation of North America, is this fresh to everybody? And I mentioned that David's book, to be published in a second edition, First Peoples in the New World, takes into account genomics. Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on. In answer to your question, this is new stuff. Up until about 10 years ago, much of what we understood about the population history of the Americas was based on mitochondrial DNA, as you mentioned, but also Y chromosome DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is inherited from mother to child, but only the maternal line passes it down. So your maternal mitochondrial DNA is from your mother, her mother, her mother, and on back the generations. Males pass down through the paternal line the Y chromosome, and so your Y chromosome marks your father and your father's father and your father's father's father all the way back. Each of them provides important genealogical information, but only of a single ancestor. So you know who your distant maternal ancestor is, but there's only one. You know who your very distant paternal ancestor is, and there's only one. And in fact, for all modern humans, that ancestral mother and that ancestral father lived in Africa some 200,000 to 300,000 years ago. But it's almost certain that none of the rest of their DNA got passed down, because over the years, the rest of the genome, all those DNA letters in the alphabet that you inherit from both your parents and in turn both their parents on the way back, is represented in your genome, those 3.2 billion letters. We can use all of that genetic information to tell you not just about a single ancestor deep in time, a distant mother or a distant father, but about all of the ancestors who contributed to your genetic history. And I should clarify that just a tad. Not necessarily all of them, because over time, the chunks of DNA that you inherit from all of those distant ancestors gets chopped up down through the generations as more DNA comes into the mix as a consequence of the process of recombination. So there's a finite number of ancestors who are represented in your genome and my genome, but it's still a huge number of people. And so with the genome, we can actually see the complexity, the nuance, the rich tapestry of ancestry of individuals and of peoples and of populations.
The last glacial maximum, and some caveats that David and his colleague make right away in the article. This is a small sample, so the revelations are incomplete. There are many more questions raised brilliantly in David's piece than are answered. However, that is the road ahead for genomics. Also, there are fewer samples, if I read correctly, David, in North America than in South America. But I take us to the last glacial maximum. This is 23,000 years before the present to 19,000 years before the present, when the water level of the oceans went down 50 meters. What did that permit the people of northeastern Siberia?
Well, let me add a few more details here, John, if I may. Actually, global sea levels worldwide on average dropped about 130 meters. But they only needed to drop 50 meters, as you mentioned, in order for the land bridge, the shallow continental shelf separating Siberia and Alaska, to be exposed as dry land. And during the last glacial maximum, that period between 23 and 19,000 years ago, you basically had so much ice on land that it locked up all of that water. Most of that water was coming out of the oceans, evaporating out of the oceans, moving out as clouds over dry land. It was raining, it was snowing, and it basically froze. And so the hydrological cycle gets interrupted. The water doesn't get returned to the oceans. Ocean levels drop. And once they've dropped at least 50 meters, any area of continental shelf between Alaska and Siberia that is less than 50 meters below surface is going to be dry land. When that happened, you had a land bridge that connected up Siberia and Alaska. And don't think of this as some narrow rope bridge over the Amazon. This was, 1,000 miles north to south, a substantial bridge. You would not necessarily have had a clue when you were walking east toward the rising sun that you were leaving one hemisphere for another. Going from Siberia to Alaska would not necessarily have been obvious to you because, again, you don't really have a sense that you're on some sort of narrow causeway between two hemispheres. So we know that the first people who came into the Americas were coming out of Northeast Asia. We know that they were in America, in the Americas, let's just go ahead and make it plural, by at least 15,000 years ago. One of the things that genomics has enabled us to do, and I should add the caveat that I am not now, nor have I ever been, a geneticist. I work with my close colleague, Eske Willerslev, who is one. So I'm giving you the archaeological side of the story, and with apologies for any myths in terms of, or mistakes in terms of the genetic record. But what we know is that from the genetics, we see a separation of Northeast Asian and ancestral Native American populations sometime around 23,000 years ago, plus or minus. We know people were in the Americas by 15,000 years ago. So that gives us a window within which we believe people were making that traverse. People were going from Siberia into Alaska and positioning themselves to move further south into the Americas.
Right. We have the physical land bridge. We also have the suggestion that the ice is over the North American continent as far south as the United States is now. However, I need to start with what I learned from this presentation about the makeup of the people who are going to cross that land bridge. You speak of Paleo-Siberians. You speak of ancient, well, let me put it this way. Ancient Siberians, you speak of basal Americans. I want to concentrate on the basal Americans because they're fundamental to the peopling of North America. Who were they? What do we know where their origins came from?
Well, it's complicated. So we know that the ancient North Siberians are in, Eurasia, sometime after about 35,000 years ago. And we've got this population up in the far north. We also have a population in East Asia, areas present day China, for example. And what happens sometime around around 20,000, we have, or actually probably earlier, we have evidence of interaction between these two distinctive populations, distinctive in the sense that they have different ancestries. I mean, ultimately, all modern humans are tracing back to a common ancestor much, much earlier in time. But by then, they'd been separated for tens of thousands of years. And sometime, you know, after 26, 25, 24,000 years ago, we have interaction, admixture, gene flow between these two different groups. And it's out of that admixture that a distinctive population in turn arises. And those are our ancestral Native Americans. That's the sort of basal root of what will become Native American populations. They become distinctive largely because they become isolated. This is a time when we're in the midst of glacial cold. It's a time when groups are probably seeking refuge and refugia, that's the ecological term, where they can kind of hang out during these periods of harsh, harsh climate. And those kinds of conditions oftentimes lend themselves to groups becoming isolated. Some groups may go south, others may head to the coast. And over a long period of time, there's a drop-off and indeed a cessation of gene flow between these different groups. And as a consequence, you start to develop distinctive genetic markers. Now, I think I need to stress something here. We're not talking about people becoming smarter or faster. The genetic markers that we're looking at are what are known as neutral traits. They don't necessarily bear on your health, your abilities, the types of diets that you may be able to tolerate. They are essentially neutral with respect to natural selection. So the particular markers that you have are really just kind of random changes in the letters of the genome. And so these are happening all the time. This is the process of mutation. And so over time, these groups, when I say they become distinctive, they're really just becoming distinctive in terms of combinations or patterns of the letters in the genome. They're not necessarily becoming, you know, one group smarter, one group faster. It's not that sort of thing. Anyway, so we have this population. They become isolated for a time. They become distinctive for a time. And at some point, those are the folks, these ancestral Native Americans, who will make the crossing over the land bridge and into North America.
I'm speaking with Professor David Meltzer. He and his colleague Eske Willerslev have published in Nature magazine, Peopling of the Americas, as inferred from ancient genomics. When we come back, those basal Americans, isolated by the ice, the changing conditions, what happens? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.